Good morning, everyone. Today's daf in Yuma is daf Yud, born daf Testament base. The Gemara yesterday took us through a very basic discussion, fundamental discussion in terms of the Chorban Beis HaMikdash. We have destruction of two Batei Mikdash so far to speak about, and also the truth of the matter is we also have the destruction of Mishkan Shiloh, which, as we discussed yesterday, also lasts for nearly four centuries. So as a result of what were these Beit Batei Mikdash destroyed, so the Gemara gave a number of explanations specific to each one of the Beit Mikdash. So for Shiloh, the Gemara said yesterday, Eli's sons were involved in Arayos and they were involved in Bizui Kachim, immoral activity, and also just didn't treat Karbanos with the proper respect. In terms of the first Beit Mikdash, so the Gemara said yesterday, the big three, Shvichas, Damim, Gilor, Arayos, and Avodah Zarah. And to that, the Gemara says that the result of that, the first Beit Mikdash was destroyed. But the Gemara said yesterday that because the Averis that were done Begilui, they were done exposed openly. We were not underhanded about these Averis, so therefore they were Megala Hakates. The in terms of how long we're going to be sent into exile, so that was revealed. The Nevi'im told us that we're only going to be in exile for 70 years. They actually gave the number out of 70 years. And then the second Beit Mikdash, the Gemara says, why was that destroyed? So I think famously, everyone hears this again and again, and still, as many times as we've heard it, I think we need to hear it a little bit more. But Sinas Chinam, the second Beis HaMikdash was destroyed on account of baseless hatred. The Gemara says that they were learning Torah and they were doing mitzvos and they were doing acts of chesed, and still, nevertheless, they had so much Sinas Chinam that the second Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. Okay. And so that's in a nutshell yesterday's daf. That's what we discussed over the course of yesterday. We're on the bottom of the Amud. The Gemara points down at the very bottom that all we're left with nowadays is just a baskol. In other words, we don't have Nevuah, we don't have Ruach HaKodesh. The only thing that we have is baskol, some echo effect of what the HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants, what the Shekhinah wants. But that's the totality of what we have. If we could just pick it up from where we left off yesterday, just taking up a couple lines. On Testament base, about five lines from the bottom of the Amud, the Gemara says, "Amar Rabbi Abba Bas Kol Kedetayim Mishemes Neviim Achronim Chagai Zecharim Melachi." When the last of the Neviim died, they are Chagai Zecharim Melachi. This is now the beginning of Bais Sheni. Nistaku Ruach HaKodesh Meisrael. So therefore, we no longer had Ruach HaKodesh. Ruach HaKodesh was a higher form of the knowledge of the divine, a closer connection with the Kadosh Baruch Hu. But still, there was the use of the Baskol. Baskol still existed beyond that point in time. Look, we know, meaning we can go back to the Gemaras regarding Beit Shammai and Beis Hillel, and the Baskol comes down and says the halacha is like Beis Hillel, right? Or like with Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yoshua, and the Baskol comes down and says halacha is not like Rabbi Eliezer. So we know that we've seen generationally, even after. Well, after into the Bais Sheni, even after the Bais Sheni, so we see that there's some form of baskol that's being used. But the Gemara says, "But that's it. There was nothing stronger than a baskol. That's the extent of our reception." This is where we left off yesterday. The Gemara now had a discussion yesterday where Reish Lakish was in the yard day and he was bathing and Rabba Bar Bachana was helping him out and they discussed and, you know, debated a little bit. Right? What was the comment that Reish Lakish said to Rabba Bar Bachana yesterday? You remember? He says, you know, God hates you. Right? That was a strong statement, I understand. But you, not meaning you personally, Rabba Bar Bachana, but all the Babylonians. And part of his comment was, if you would have came up to Eretz Yisrael to help rebuild the second Beit HaMikdash, it wouldn't have been destroyed. But because you decided Bavel was so good and Yulai had it so good in Bavel, so the second Beit HaMikdash was not a permanent edifice. That was the conversation between Reish Lakish and Rabba Bar Bachana. So the Gemara here is just simply pointing out, Reish Lakish wouldn't talk to Rabba Bar Bachana. Now I know that sounds a little elitist, but the Gemara is about to explain. Now, the Gemara says, look, Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Elazar was the top of Mor in Eretz Yisrael. The Gemara refers to him as Mar da'ara, right? The master of the land, right? We have a term Mar da'asra, right? Mar da'asra means the master of the city, of the community. So Mar da'ara, so obviously it's a bigger title, meaning Rabbi Elazar was the head of all of Eretz Yisrael. And meanwhile, Reish Lakish wouldn't talk to him publicly. Because the Gemara says, look, Reish Lakish was so selective about who he spoke about. Reish Lakish apparently had an unbelievable reputation. which is, of course, interesting because Reish Lakish himself started off as being a correct, not the most not a person with utmost integrity. He was a thief. That's how his life started. But met Rav Yochanan, became a Baal Tshuva, and he became a Talmid Chacham. And on top of that, the Gemara over here says that he was also, his reputation now became like a super honest guy. And therefore, any person that he spoke with, says the Gemara, let me read it inside. Bahadei demanded Mishtar Reish Lakish Bahadei. If Reish Lakish is talking to you, Bashuk, in the marketplace, meaning publicly, Yavale Iska, below Sahadei. So at that point in time, you know that the person that he was talking to was a very well reputed person. And the person's extremely honest. And he would just, all of a sudden, his resume looked unbelievable. Right? On his resume, he writes, I spoke with Reish Lakish in public. And that was it. Meaning there's nothing else he needed to say. No background check and anything, nothing. And people just dealt with him honestly. So Reish Lakish wouldn't even talk to Rebbe Lazar in public. So the Gemara is assuming, how in the world can you possibly imagine that Reish Lakish is going to talk to Rabbi Baruch Hanna? Rabbi Baruch Hanna was not a native to Israel. He's coming from Bavel. It's just hard to imagine. The Gemara says, I can't even imagine they spoke to one another publicly. So the Gemara says, Bahadi Rabbi Barchan Mishtai, so Amar Papa, Shtigav Rabbi Nayu. So Rabbi Papa says, you're absolutely right. We're just going to have to. We're going to have to change one of the members of the story. So either Reish Lakish Havev is Ziri. So it could be that it's Reish Lakish and Ziri. And the Gemara is assuming that we have some Masorah, some tradition that Reish Lakish would speak to Ziri. Oh, Rabbi Barchana Havev Rabbi Lazar. Or you could say that the story would involve Rabbi Barchana and not Reish Lakish, but rather Rabbi Lazar. Okay, so we're going to have to change around one of the two main protagonists of the story, just so that it will work out, because the Gemara says, I just can't imagine Reish Lakish would talk to Rabbi Barchana in public. So they go to Rav Yochanan, and Rav Yochanan says no. Meaning, Reish Lakish comes in front of Rav Yochanan. Reish Lakish tells Rav Yochanan, this is what I said to so-and-so. Meaning, Reish Lakish gave his explanation why the second temple didn't last. So again, what was Reish Lakish's explanation? So he said, because the Jews stayed in Bavel. And most of the Jews didn't come back to Eretz Yisrael. That was Reish Lakish's reason. So Rav Yochanan says, no, that's not, I don't think so. So Amar Leh Lav Haynu Taima, In Ami Sliku Kulu B'Yemei Ezra Lo Hava Shar Yishchina B'Mikdash Sheni. Rav Yochanan says, if all the Jews would have gone up from Bavel to Eretz Yisrael to build the second temple, I still believe the second temple would be destroyed. I disagree with you. So V'dichsiv Yavtalo Kim Le'yafis V'yishkan Ba'ol Hashem. So he says, I'm going to give a different reason. Why the second base of Mikdash destroyed? So the Gemara says, so Rav Yochanan explains, because of this pasuk. Now this pasuk is in reference to Noach and his three sons. Noach had three sons, Shem, Cham, Yafes. Shem, so that's us. Meaning, right, the word Semite, I'm sure everyone knows this. So Semite refers to descendants of Shem, right? Semitics. So, but that's not limited to us, not exclusive to us. Meaning Semitics, Semites are basically anyone to the east of the Mediterranean. So that's Shem. Then there's Cham. Cham is basically anyone to the south of the Mediterranean, basically Africa. And Yefes is, well, we generally say the Greeks, but as we'll learn in just a moment, not just limited to the Greeks. Yefes is basically anyone north of the Mediterranean. So the France, Germany, that Europe, basically. Okay, so that is the three-way division of the world, of the earth as we know it, amongst the three sons of Noah. The pasuk says, Yaft Elokim LeYefes, V'yishkom Be'el Hashem. Yefes is going to get beauty, as the name of Yefes indicates, Yefeh. It will get beauty. HaKadosh Baruch Hu will imbue a certain quality of beauty in Yefes, and that quality, that beauty, will Yishkon Ba'ol Hashem, will dwell in the tent of Shem. So in other words, that beauty of Yefes is going to be transferred into Shem. Now, generally speaking, when we think about this, we think about it in terms of the Greeks and Greek culture, into Yiddishkeit. The Gemara in Megillah, which we'll see shortly, talks about how the Greek language to us was not had a certain level of sanctity. According to some Tanaim, you can write the Torah in Greek. Okay, so that's generally how we think about it. Here, the Gemara is going to speak about it in a different context. So, Afagav Diavta Lekim LeYafes Ein Ashchina Shora Ela ba'ol Hashem. So this is Rav Yochanan's explanation as to why the second temple was destroyed. Because the second temple was built by whom? It wasn't built by the Jews. I mean, the Jews may have been involved in the construction. But who initiated the building? Who basically allowed the building? The Persians. The Persians allowed the building. Take a look at the top Rashi in the Amud. Shezachu parsim lev notes by Shani. The second temple was built by the Persians. Ein shechina shara ela b'mikdash rishon shabana shlomo shabam rizar shal shem. So because the building of the second temple was done by Persians, so therefore that's yafta lokim liyafes. Persian now we're going to identify as being a descendant of Yefes. And because that's so, so therefore there's no Hashra Shechina. The Shechina does not dwell in such a building. There'll be a Beis HaMikdash, but there'll be an absence of Shechina. That's why the second Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. Nothing to do with Jews staying in Bavel, Jews not coming to Eretz Yisrael. Rav Yochanan says no. It has to do with who built Beis Sheni. So the Gemara continues. The Gemara says, the Pasayim Analan Demi Yefes Kasu. So how do I know that the Persians are descendants of Yefes? So we're going to go through a lot of Gemara right now, where the Gemara is going to go through a lot of genealogy and geography and nationality, and I'm going to be a little bit lost in these upcoming Gemaras. I'm going to be the first to admit it, because we're talking now geography, but we're not even talking modern geography, which, you know, on this side of the earth I'm okay with. I know a little bit about Western Hemisphere geography, but we're going to be talking about Eastern Hemisphere geography. And on top of that, we're also going to be speaking about Eastern Hemisphere geography of, right, of the Second Temple period. So I can already tell you, I'm tapping out, meaning I'm going to be very limited in what I can explain. But in the meantime, however, I get the basic point we're going to try to make, and that is that the Persians are a descendant of Yefes, and that's it. In other words, that's really the point we've seen already. And now we're going to get into detail, into minutiae, which, again, is going to be very important. I'm just going to be very limited in terms of what I could provide as an explanation. How do I know that the Persians come from Yefes? So the Gemara says, we'll go through some psukim together. So the sons of Yefes are, and the Torah and the Navi. The Torah gives us a list of who they are. Gomer, Magog, Mada, Yavan, Tuval, Mashach, V'tiras. And the Gemara now is going to identify. Gomer is there, Germania. Now, according to the correct gear, so the Gemara is not Germania, but Germania, meaning what we know to be Germany. Now, again, to assume that modern Germany is the same Germany as described over here, possibly, but you need somebody who knows a lot to make such a statement. I'm not that person. So that is Gomer. Magog Zeh. I know it sounds like Canada, but it's not. it's some other geographical region. Madezu, Macedonia. Oh, this one I got. So Mada is a reference to Macedonia. That's Alexander the Great was a descendant of the Macedonians. Yavan Kemashmo. Yavan is Yavan, meaning we know, says the Gemara. Not we, meaning here in this room. But we know, says the Gemara, Yavan. That's Greece. So Tuval is a Beis Unaiki. So Tuval is a reference to Beis Unaiki. Your guess is better than mine. Mashach Zu Musya. And Tiras, and as far as Tiras, who's this last child of Yefes? So where does that translate to into the geography of the second century? So the Gemara says, "Pligi bar Rav Simai v'Rabbanan v'Amelah Rabbi Simai v'Rabbanan Chanamar Zu Beis Tariki v'Chanamar Zu Paras." So according to some, it's Beis Tariki, and according to others, it's Persia. Tani Rav Yosef Tira Ze Paras. So Rav Yosef translates. Now remember, Rav Yosef, we've seen this time and again. Rav Yosef was a translator of the Torah. He was an interpreter of the Torah. Right? He wrote a running targum to all of Navi and Ksuvim. And also, I mean, this is Chumash now. This is not even Navi and Ksuvim. But it's clear, though, that whenever you see a running interpretation of the Torah, so Rav Yosef is one of the prime Amoraim responsible for running interpretation. So Tiras, he says, is Paras. Safta Virama Visivtacha. So in terms of these other nationalities, Tani Rav Yosef, Sakistan, Gavyasavik, Sakistan Buraisa, the inner Sakistan and the outer Sakistan. Sounds like Pakistan, but it just sounds like that, I don't know. So Bain Chagla Chadamea Parse, the Gemara says the distance between the inner and the outer Sakistan is 100 parsa. The Ekefa Alpha Parsa, and in terms of the circumference, the perimeter, it's 1,000 parsa. Okay, period. Again, the purpose of all that is to just simply identify that Persia is a descendant of Yefes, which then brings us back to Rav Yochanan's point. Rav Yochanan says, and so what? And so, it was the Persians who built the second temple. It was Dariavish responsible for Bayit Sheni, and therefore that's why it didn't last. Because of the pasuk of Yavta Elokim Liyefes, V'yishkan Bo Alei Shem, that the Shechinah rests only when the Beis HaMikdash is built by a descendant of Shem. Bayit Rishon was built by Shlomo HaMelech, obviously a descendant of Shem. Second Beis HaMikdash was built by Paras, not a descendant of Shem, period. The Gemara said, as long as we're here, meaning at the end of Noah, going over the descendants of Shem, Cham, and Yafes. So the Gemara says, let's keep going. So what are these geographical areas? So Bavel Kamashma. So Bavel is Bavel. Okay, the Gemara says, that's easy. Erech ze Arichot. Erech is Arichot. Okay, I'm sure that's helpful to somebody. Akad ze Baskar, and Kala ze Nofer Ninfei. Okay, so again, the Gemara is just identifying what it knows to be geographical areas and nationalities that the Torah is referring to. Min haaretz ha'yatzah Ashur, and from this comes Ashur, Tani Rav Yosef, Ashur is a Silak. So again, Rav Yosef is explaining, and he says that Ashur is a reference to Silak. Va'ivan es Ninveh ves Rechavos, Ir ves Kalach Ninveh, I'm sorry, ves Kalach. And then there's a construction of the cities of Ninveh and Rehovot Ir and Kalach. So Ninveh, Kamashma, is a Ninveh. The Gemara says, we know what Ninveh is. Ninveh is the capital of Assyria. That's Ninveh. Right? Yonah. That's Ninveh. Rehovot Ir, Zepras, Demeshan. So Rehovot Ir, that's the reference to Pras Demeshan. Pras Demeshan, probably some city along the Euphrates, but that's just a guess on my part. And Kalach Zu Pras de Borsif. And Kalach is the Euphrates of Borsif. Again, probably a city running along the Euphrates River. That's Resen Bein Ninveh Uvein Kalach. Hi Ha'ir Gedola. Resen was between Ninveh and between Kalach. And it was a big city. So an ambiguous reference, we get that often in the Torah, meaning it was a big city. What was a big city? Which one of those cities was a big city? So we're going to get back to that in just a moment. Resen Zu Aktisfon. So Resen is a reference to the city of Aktisfon. He Ayir Gedola in Yodeim, Ninveh Ayir Gedola, Resen Ayir Gedola. So the Gemara says the big city. Which one's the big city? Because Shomer, Ninveh Aisa Ayir Gedola, Lelukim, Mehalach Shoshiyamim, Haviyomer, Ninveh Ayir Gedola. So the Gemara says, well, you listen to Yonah, Mafti Yonah on Yom Kippur, and you know, the Pasuk says that Ninveh is the Ayir Gedola. So now that we have the Pasuk in Yonah, we'll go back to Bereishis, Parshas Noach, and we'll simply say, okay, now I know the ambiguous reference is a reference to Ninveh. Ninveh is a big city. Visham Achiman Sheshavitama Yilede Hanak. So we are in the process of identification. So the Gemara is going to continue, even though we're going to be going a little bit off course right now. We are in Parsha Shlach. We are describing the giants living in Israel, who intimidated the spies as the spies went to go scout out and see what's going on in Eretz Yisrael. And there in Eretz Yisrael you have Achiman Sheshai V'Tamai Yelidei Ha'anak. They were giants, children of the giants. Tana, Achiman Miyuman Sheba'achim. So Achiman, the Gemara is going to darshan the names themselves. So Achiman is Miyuman, right? The most special, the most unique. Shishai Shemesim Esa'aretz Kishchisos. So Shishai, so he destroys the land, meaning just by simply walking on the land. He was such a giant. So he destroyed it, and Tamai, Shemesim Esa'aretz Talamim Talamim. Tamai from the word Talam, which means roads, furrows. So as he walked through the field, he basically, just by his footsteps, created roads and furrows in the land. Tava Acha Achiman Bana Anat, Shishai Bana Alush, Tamai Bana Talbush. Okay, and then the Gemara identifies that they were three cities built by these three giants. Yelidei Ha'anak, they are children of the Anak, that's a reference to the father. Now, the word Anak also is a reference to a necklace. And the Gemara Darshan, Shema Anikim Achama Bekomasam. Because he was so height, so it basically looked like that as he was standing up, that he wore the sun like a necklace. Meaning he was so tall, his head went so high up into the sky, it gave the appearance that the sun was a necklace. Amar Yishuv Ben Levi, Amar Rabbi Atida Rami Shiti Bo Biad Paras. Okay, and prognostication on the part of the Amorai. So Rabbi Yishuv Ben Levi quotes, and he quotes this in the name of Rabbi, that Rome will fall in the hands of the Persians. Okay, Shenamar, Lachin Shimu Atzas Hashem Asher Ya'atz, El Edom Umachshavosav, Asher Chashav El Yoshvei Teman. Im Lo Yischabum Tzirei Atzon, Im Lo Yasim Aleihem Nohem. So the Pasuk in Yirmiyahu, which is forecasting some future event, sounds like from that Pasuk that Edom is the Romans, so will fall on the hands of the Tzirei Hason. And the Gemara's assumption right now that Tzirei Hason is a reference to the Persians. So Maskev la Rabba bar Ulamai Mashmadai Tzirei Hason Parasu. That's an assumption. How did you know that? How come we're assuming the Pasuk in Yirmiyahu describing the Tzirei Hason, that's a reference to Persian, that Edom is going to fall in the hands of the Persians? How did you know that? Dechsiv, so the Gemara says, I'll tell you how I know that. Let's go to Sefer Daniel. Because in one of the visions that Daniel sees, so he says that the eye of the ram, okay, a developed sheep, meaning it's sown, so the eye of Shereita Bal Karnayim, so Machem Adayu Faras, that's a connection, that is an analogy to the nationalities of Madayu Faras. So the Gemara says, okay, good. So that's how I see, and that's how I know that the Pasuk in Yirmiyahu describing the overturning of Edom will be done by the Paras. Ve'ema Yavan. So the Gemara says, well, maybe it's Yavan. Dichsiv atzapir asir melch Yavan. So the Gemara says, okay, but it could also be a reference to Yavan as well, as we have another Pasuk in Daniel, which also compares the Sa'ir to that of Yavan, and the Sa'ir would be a fair interpretation of the word stone. Stone is just simply means small animals. So Kisalak Rav Chaviva Bar Samaki Amra Kameda Umar Rabban Amale Mandalo Yada Prusha Krai Mosif Tuyufta La Rebbe. So he says, look, somebody who doesn't understand Psukim, he's going to ask a question on Rebbe. Maitzi Reason Zutra Dachoi. So it's referring to the youngest of the brothers. And we go back to that Pasuk in Noach, the youngest of the brothers. Right, go back, you can take a look at the pasuk all the way at the top of the Amud. B'nei Yefes, the children of Yefes are Gomer, Magog, Madai, Yavan, Tuval, Meshech, V'tiras. Okay, so we're at the youngest of the brothers. Who is the youngest of the brothers? So that's Tiras, but we also know Da'achoy Tani Rav Yosef, Tiras Uparas. It's a reference to Persia. So once again, if you know your Targum Rav Yosef on the Navi, so you'll know that, and on the Chumash, you'll know that it's a reference to Persia. So once again, we go back to that Pasuk in Yirmiyahu, and we're only left to conclude that it's the Persians that will overrun and eventually in the future conquer the Rome. Okay, and if we assume, I mean, if we could just think about this, although I'm certainly not in a position to prognosticate, but modern-day Persia is Iran. So if you think about it, it's a little scary what the Gemara is suggesting, but okay, that's not for me to prognosticate. Amar Rabba Baruch Hanan, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Mishum Rabbi Yehuda, Abba Rabbi Eli, Atida Rami Shetipo Biad Paras. So the Romans are going to fall in the hands of the Persians. How do I know that? Kal v'chomer. So Gemara says it's based on a simple kal v'chomer. So funny. We usually understand kal v'chomer in the context of addressing halacha, learning halacha, right, resulting in halacha. Now we're going to employ the kal v'chomer methodology and basically say, I can predict historical events on it, but using a simple kal v'chomer. Okay? So umam mikdash rishon shebanu b'nei shem ve'achirivu kasdim. So let's set our kal v'chomer up. The first Beis HaMikdash was built by the descendants of Shem. Shlomo HaMelech built the first Beis HaMikdash. And it was destroyed by the Kasdim. The Kasdim, the Chaldeans, another reference to Nebuchadnezzar and Bavel. They also went by the name of Kasdim. Naflu Kasdim Biad Parsim. And who eventually conquered the Chaldeans, the Kasdim? So that would be the Persians. Okay, so descendants of Shem built the first Beis HaMikdash. First Beis HaMikdash was destroyed by Bavel, Kasdim, and the Persians beat them. Okay, so it gives you a sense now of how strong the Persians are. Mikdash Sheni Shebanu Parsim. So now, in the second Beis HaMikdash, it was built by the Persians. So now they have an investment over here. They have a stake. And Ve'achiruva Romim. And the Romans destroyed it. So here's the Kal V'chomer. If they're going to conquer the people who destroyed the first Beis HaMikdash, and there they didn't have a personal investment, then they didn't have a stake. The second Beis HaMikdash which they themselves built, giving them now an investment in the second Beis HaMikdash. So you don't think they're interested in a little revenge? So Eino Din Sheyiplu Ramim Biat Parsiim. So if the Romans destroyed the second temple, for sure the Persians are going to destroy the Romans. Okay. That is Adkan, that's one approach. So we have now, in our first approach, in the staging the final battle of Romans versus Persia, so we have now a number of Amoraim who are of the opinion, and Rebbe, I should point out, a Tana, who says that Persia is going to upset Rome. Okay. Amarava Tita Parsha Tipal Biad Romi. Okay. And then there's a machlokas in terms of what will happen in the future. And now we're up to Shitas Rav. Rav says, no, it's going to go the other way. Persia is going to fall in the hands of the Romans. Okay. Which again is interesting. Rav is a student of Rebbe. So obviously he's really disagreeing with his Rebbe on what will happen ultimately. So Amale Rav Kanav Rav Asila Rav Banui Biat Sasure. So I don't understand. The students of Rav are asking Rav. This is Rav Kahana. This is Rav Asi. The students of Rav, they said it doesn't make any sense logically. What are you talking about? The builders, meaning the Persians, are going to lose to the destroyers, the Romans. Meaning, if we were to try to understand, like what would be divinely correct? It should be that the Persians who built the second temple should conquer the Romans who destroyed the second temple. That would be logical, and you're arguing the other way around, that the Romans are going to beat the Persians. The Romans destroyed the second temple. The Persians built it. That doesn't make any sense. So I'm alluding in Gzeres Melechi. So Rav's response is Gzeres HaMelech, meaning, okay, logically you may be right, but Gzeres HaMelech, that's God's decree, not to be understood by us. Ikedamri Amri Inu Nami Hakasasre Bekenishta. Or another response that Rav gave to this question is the Persians were also destroyers. They didn't destroy the Second Temple, but they destroyed Shuls. Okay, I don't know what the Gemara is referring to over here. The reference of they destroyed Shuls, but the Gemara, Rav says, but they also were involved in destruction. And so don't be too quick to say that it's just a simple Persia should beat Rome because Persia built the Second Temple. It's not that clear. It's not that simple. The Gemara says, and we have a braisa supporting this as well. Okay, so Rav did not initiate this position. Rav maybe had a tradition from the braisa, although it's only fair to ask if the braisa is saying it. So how can the braisa be disagreeing with Rabbi? Okay, but apparently the braisa is. Persians are going to fall in the hands of the Romans. First of all, the Persians were destroyers of shoals. The Gemara is assuming this is a fact. And va'od gzeres hamelech hu sheyiplu bonim biyad sosrim. And on top of that, it's also gzeres hamelech, meaning it's beyond our comprehension, right? Should be that the Romans should beat the Persians. Sorry, other way around. Should be that the Persians beat the Romans. The Persians are the builders of the Beis HaMikdash. Romans are the destroyers of the Beis HaMikdash. But gzeres hamelech, that's just simply God's decree. I'm Rav Yiram Ravin ben David Ba, Ashitivsha Machuz Rami Arisha, Becholah Olam Kulam. And the Gemara points out, it also conforms to another statement that was made by Rav. Rav Yehuda Marav says that Ben David is going to come, Mashiach is going to come, only when the Romans have total world domination. So it has to be, in other words, as a antecedent to the coming of the Mashiach, that Rome is going to dominate the entire world. So it has to be that Rome is going to destroy Persia, defeat Persia. Otherwise, we won't have Mashiach coming. So, sorry, I stopped in the middle of the sentence. B'chol alam kulo tisha chadashim. And it has to have a world domination that lasts for 9 months. Shenem malachin yinem ad eis yolda v'yasachav yishuvan ben Yisrael. When there is 9 months, right, the Navi Micha refers to it as the time of gestation. So a 9 month period where they will rule, so then and only then the Jews are going to return back to Eretz Yisrael. Okay, so it has to be that Rome is going to defeat Persia and not the opposite. Okay? That was a long digression in the Gemara. All of it resulted from a basic debate between Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish. Why was the Second Temple destroyed? So again, just to quickly summarize, Reish Lakish says, you know why? Because the Jews didn't come back from Bavel. Only a small percentage of Jews came back from Bavel, not all the Jews. And Reish Lakish therefore concluded that had the Jews all come back from Bavel to build the Beit Sheni, it would have stood presumably forever. Okay, would have been a more stable edifice. That is the opinion of Reish Lakish. Rav Yochanan disagrees. Rav Yochanan says, no, the reason why the second temple is destroyed has nothing to do with the percentage of Jews who came back to rebuild the second temple. Rav Yochanan says, even if all the Jews were to come back and rebuild the second temple, it would be destroyed. But rather, Rav Yochanan says, the reason why the second temple was destroyed is because it was built by Persia, and not by the Jews, and not by Semites. And the Pasuk says, Yaftal Kim Leifes Vishkan Ba'al Alei Shem, that the only time that you have Shechinas HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the Beis HaMikdash is only if it's built by Shem. If it's built by Yefet, which we spent an amud basically identifying, Yefes is Persia. If it's built by Yefes, so then it won't have Hashra Shechina, will not have the divine presence, and that's why the second temple didn't last. Okay, Adkan. Okay, and we continue. We're on Yud Amud Aleph, we're at the two dots, and Tana Rabbanan Kol Alishka Shai B'Mikdash La Yelam Mezuzah. And we are going to be starting a discussion now, which will take us into tomorrow's daf as well, and that is the discussion of Mezuzah. Okay, shuls require mezuzah? No. But you'll never walk into a shul and not see a mezuzah. You always see a mezuzah. So we're not going to be talking about the shul, but we're going to be talking about the Beis HaMikdash. So the Beis HaMikdash has a mezuzah? Shouldn't, really. I mean, before we start with the Gemara, what is the basic criteria of mezuzah? It has to be beveisecha. It has to be in your houses. It has to be a residential area. The Beis HaMikdash is not residential. You don't have people living in the Beis HaMikdash, so therefore it would seem ostensibly that there should be no mezuzah on the Beis HaMikdash. I know, it may strike some of us as strange, meaning the holiest building in the world doesn't have a mezuzah, but the answer would be correct. The mezuzah is required for residential housing, not for the Beis HaMikdash. So that's just the starting point of the discussion, but the Gemara is going to get involved in this discussion about mezuzah and the Beis HaMikdash. So let's not talk about the Beis HaMikdash as a grand structure, because that's a big conversation, right? It's easier to have the smaller conversations. Let's just talk about Lishkas Parhedrin, okay? Residential or non-residential? It's funny, right? 7 days a year, it's residential. Cohen's living in the Lishkas Parhedrin for 7 days a year. Is that going to be enough to justify a mezuzah? Now, probably, if you're thinking right now, you'll realize, well, we have another event that happens to us annually where we also live 7 days in a house, and that's Sukkos. So do we put a mezuzah on our Sukkos? So we know we don't. Okay? So basically where we're going to end the daf today is, well, what's the difference? If we're going to put up a mezuzah on Lishkas Parhedrin, which we're going to see in just a moment, we will. A mezuzah will go up on Lishkas Parhedrin because the Kohen lives living there for 7 days. So then a sukkah, where we're leaving our house and moving to the sukkah for 7 days, ostensibly should require a mezuzah. So that's where we're going to end today's daf and the Amud Beis, where we're going to see if we can articulate a distinction, a difference between them. Tana Rabban, let's begin the discussion. Kol alishka shayu b'mikdash lo yala mezuzah. So in general, chambers are right. You look behind me, you'll see there are chambers all around the Azara, and also in the Ezra's Nashim. And in the Har Bais area also, there were chambers, and there was no requirement to mezuzah. They're not residential. Chutz mi Lishkas Parhedrin shayyaba beis dira lakohen gadol. So except for Lishkas Parhedrin, why? Because it was residential 7 days out of the year, a residential dwelling for the Kohen Gadol. So I'm Rav Yudav alo kam Lishkas shayyaba beis dira lakohen gadol beis dira. V'lo yam lahen mezuzah. So he says, what do you mean? Walk around the Beis HaMikdash, and I'll show you a number of lishkos that were a Beis Dira. Beis Dira, meaning who was living there? So if you take a look at Rashi, Rashi says Shomer HaBayis, guards. There was guards to the Beis HaMikdash. So where did the guards, or where did they retire? Where did they sleep? Where did they spend their days, their nights? So they spent time in the lishka. So a number of the chambers surrounding the Beis HaMikdash that had occupancy and didn't have a mezuzah. So what Rav Yehuda is arguing is, let's be consistent. If the others don't have a mezuzah and people are living there, so the Parhedrin also, even though the Kohen Gadol was living there 7 days of the year, shouldn't have a mezuzah. Ela lishkas Parhedrin gzera haisa. So Rav Yehuda is arguing, I agree with you that there is a mezuzah at Lishkas Parhedrin, but that's just simply a gzera. That's not me'ikar hadin, that's not the strict letter of the law, but it's just simply the rabbis enacted a mezuzah should go up there, for reasons which we will explain in just a moment. Fine. So what we have in our braisa right now is a basic machlokes between the Tanakam and Rav Yehuda. The agreement is there's a mezuzah on the parhedrin, on Lishkas parhedrin. The disagreement is that a requirement or just a rabbinic stringency? The Tanakam says it's a requirement. Cohen's living there for 7 days out of the year. Requirement. Rav Yehuda says no requirement. It is not a permanent residence, and so therefore there's no requirement to put up a mezuzah there. The mezuzah goes up on Lishkas Parhedrin for a separate reason, which we'll discuss later this morning. So my time is Rav Yehuda. So what's behind Rav Yehuda? So Amar Rabba Kesav Rav Yehuda Kol Beishenu Asur Limosek Hamel Limosek Shamein Abayis. Because the definition of a house, meaning again, we know a mezuzah goes Bevei Secha, goes on your house. Now what we have to do in classic Gemara fashion is define a house. What's a house? So the Gemara says a house is, according to Rav Yehuda, a resident that's built for use for both winter and summer. Meaning not a seasonal residence, but a full year residence. So now, unclear, by the way, whether the Gemara is talking about actual occupancy or just it could be used for both the winter and the summer. Okay, I'm not 100% sure in terms of what the Gemara means when it says full year, right? We live in the land of seasonal residence, right, here. So it's hard to imagine that just because you don't live there for half of the year, that means now it's not chayv and mezuzah. Hard to imagine. It sounds more like it's built for both seasons. So, Abayis says, what about the Pasuk in Amos? And it sounds like from this Pasuk in Amos that there's a winter house, there's a summer house, so it's not, but what does it sound like? It sounds like it's a house. Even though it's a house built just for the winter. Even though it's a house just built for the summer, it sounds like that nevertheless it's a house. The answer to Abaye, the deflection of this proof of the pasuk is very simple. Amalei beis chorfa ubeis kaitz ikre bayis tama lo ikre. Okay, they're different. Meaning a summer house is a summer house. The Torah's requirement of a mezuzah is just for a bayis, just for a house, and so therefore maybe the beis kaitz and the beis chorfa do not define a house. So Eisve the Gemara challenges. Eisve Abaye challenges again from a Braisa, a Tosefta. Maybe it's a Mishnah. Anyway, Sukkah is a Chag b'Chag. Rav Yehuda mechayev v'chachamim pochim. A Sukkah ha-Chag, meaning a Sukkah. During Chag, meaning during the 7 days of Sukkah, where there's a requirement for all of us to dwell in the Sukkah, Rav Yehuda says, you're chayev. You're obligated, v'chachamim say you're pater. B'tini Allah, Rav Yehuda mechayev. Now, when Rav Yehuda is mechayev, what is he mechayev? So he's mechayev in Erev, Mezuzah, and Meiser. Let's go through all three. Erev. It's chayev and Erev. What does that mean? It means that if your sukkah is open up to a chatzer, we know, we spent an entire Masechta learning, every house opening up to a chatzer must participate, must contribute to the Erev. Now, that's only true if your house is a residential home. So, says Rav Yehuda, for the 7 days of Sukkah, your house is a residential home. And therefore, you must contribute to the Erev. And your failure to contribute to the Erev will disqualify the Erev. Won't be a good Erev. So, vis-a-vis the halacha of Erev, Sukkah is a home. That's one. Two, mezuzah. That's simple. Meaning, according to Rav Yehuda, during the 7 days of Sukkah, your Sukkah is required, it requires a mezuzah. And finally, Meiser. What does that mean, Meiser? So we know that once you bring your food into your house is a koveya. It establishes, I say food, by the way, I mean like produce, right? The grains of the field, the fruits of the field. So once you bring it into your house is a koveya, right? We talked about how there are six different things that are koveya that basically fix your food. So now that your food is chayv and shumas and maisos. So one of them is your house, your bias. So even though it's a temporary home, Rav Yehuda is of the opinion that nevertheless it's a koveya and it will make the produce that you bring in chayv and shumas and maestros. Good. So in these three halachas, your sukkah, during sukkahs is considered a house, so is the opinion of Rav Yehuda. So now, let's think about this. What's the issue? What's the problem? The problem is that now we have Rav Yehuda who say that there is a requirement for the 7 days of Sukkot that your sukkah is chayv in sukkah, in mezuzah, in erev, and in ma'aser. So what is Rev Yehuda basically saying? For those 7 days, what's your sukkah? It's a house. So now, the problem is very simple. Meaning, going back to Lishkas Parhedrin, what did Rav Yehuda say regarding Lishkas Parhedrin? It doesn't require mezuzah. Not even during those 7 days where the Kohen is occupying the Lishkas Parhedrin. It doesn't require mezuzah. The mezuzah is up there, but that's for rabbinic purposes, which we will explain in just a moment. But it doesn't require. So now we're at somewhat of an impasse. Because here in this Mishnah, Braisa, whatever it is, the Rav Yehuda says that your sukkah during sukkahs requires a mezuzah. Now,
but in terms of functionality, if you think about it, the sukkah is much more functional as a home.
Okay, so good. So the Gemara is going to first suggest another distinction, or not a distinction, but another solution, which is v'chitema midrabanan. So the Gemara says, well, maybe that Mishnah you just quoted me, that's only talking about a din d'rabbanan. Meaning when Rav Yehuda says that your sukkah requires a mezuzah, that doesn't mean on a d'oraisa level. Maybe it's only on the d'rabbanan level. The Gemara says, hard to entertain such a thought. Bishlama erev a mezuzah yigal ameim a d'rabbanan. Meaning, mezuzah and erev, yes, you can argue it's a din d'rabbanan. Possibly. But you cannot say that the requirement, the obligation of Meister is a din de rabban. Why can't you say that? Top of Yud Amud Beis, the Masel Efrushim Ena Chival Patur. Because if your house, or now I shouldn't say house, if your sukkah during sukkahs is a koveya for Trumas and Meisters, and we're suggesting now that that's only a din d'rabbanan, that will result in a halachic catastrophe. Which would mean that all the produce that you bring into your sukkah, what are you thinking right now? Oh, my sukkah is a koveya. It's no different than me bringing my produce into my house. Oh, so my produce now is obligated in Trumas HaMaestros. Now, if what you're telling me is that this is only a din d'rabbanan, so that means that min haTorah, is this produce obligated in Trumas HaMaestros? No, not yet. Because it hasn't met a koveya. It hasn't been established yet. So that means then that I'm going to be erroneously thinking that this produce is chayiv in Trumas HaMaestros. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to take two piles and I'll be mafrish one pile onto another, assuming this pile is obligated in Trumas HaMaestros and this pile is obligated in Trumas HaMaestros, and I'll be mafrish min achiv al apetur. I'll be mafrish from one pile which is actually obligated onto another pile which is actually not obligated min haTorah. So in other words, to ever get into a situation where you're going to lead people to believe that produce is chayv and Trumas HaMaestros, so it will result in you erroneously separating Trumas HaMaestros from a pile which is obligated to a pile which min haTorah is not. Min achiv al patur, min patur al achiv. So it can't be. So when Rav Yehuda says that your sukkah during sukkahs is chayiv in erev, mezuzah, and truma, it must be that all three of them are speaking on a d'oraisa level. And so therefore, el amar abaye. So the Gemara says, so now we're a little bit stuck. Because during sukkahs, Rav Yehuda requires a mezuzah, and as we've just established, your sukkah requires a mezuzah min haTorah. And now we go back to Lishkas Parhedrin, and now we learned earlier this morning that Rav Yehuda does not require min haTorah a mezuzah on the Lishkas Parhedrin for the Kohen Gadol who's living there for 7 days. What's the difference? Why should it be different? So Elam Rabbi, so Rabbi is going to attack this a different way. B'shiva dekulei amalot pligid demechayva. So Rabbi now would like to suggest that during the 7 days, meaning the 7 days of Sukkot, the second of 7 days when the Kohen Gadol is occupying Lishkas Parhedrin, we don't have a debate. There is a requirement to put up a mezuzah over there, according to Rabbi Yehuda. By the way, mind you, this is an entire discussion of the Gemara, all revolving around Shitas Rabbi Yehuda, which we don't hold of, but nevertheless, though, according to Rabbi Yehuda, there is a requirement during those 7 days. Keep looking at B'Shar Yom HaShana, and the Machlokis is during the rest of the year. Rabban and Savri Gazrin B'Shar Yom HaShana to Shiva, where the Chachamim say, well, as long as there has to be a mezuzah up there during the seven days prior to Yom Kippur, keep the mezuzah up there for the rest of the year. And Rav Yehuda, several logos, and Rav Yehuda says, no, don't keep it up during the rest of the year. This is all Abaye's approach. Okay? Amale Rava. So Rava says to Abaye, I cannot imagine you're right. V'hasukah achag b'cha ketani. First of all, can we go back to that brice on the bottom of the previous Amud, where the brice has said, Sukkah sachag bachag. Pretty clear. We're talking about Sukkah, in a Sukkah, during Sukkahs. And what do the brice say? Rav Yehuda requires a mezuzah. And what about the Chachamim? Do not require a mezuzah. So hard to imagine that you now, Abaye, are going to try to explain that during the 7 days, where Kulei Alma, everyone agrees that a mezuzah goes up. Hard to imagine. If you read the brice in the previous Amud, it sounds like we're having a basic machlokas between the Chacham and Rav Yehuda during the 7 days. So El Amar Rava says, I'm going to give a different approach. During the rest of the year, meaning the non-7 days. So everyone's in agreement that there's no mezuzah requirement. Kipliga b'shiva. So when are we having a machlokas? We're having it during the 7 days. And now, as usual, Ben, you were ahead of the game. And now the Gemara is going to make a distinction between Sukkah and Parhedrin. Sukkah time alachod, v'lishka time alachod. And Sukkah and Parhedrin, and the Lishka's Parhedrin, are based on two different reasonings. Sukkah time alachod, Rav Yehuda time adamer, Sukkah diras keva be'inan, umechayve me'mezuzah. And for Sukkah, here we go. The beginning of Masechta Sukkah. Basic machlok is between Rav Yehuda and the Chachamim. Can your sukkah be above 20 amos?
Yes.
All right, so Rav Yehuda says yes. And the Chachamim say no. Because the Chachamim say that your sukkah, by definition, has to be diras arai. Has to be a temporary residence. And Rav Yehuda says no, it could be koveh, it could be kavua. So now, knowing that fundamental machlok is between Rav Yehuda and the Chachamim, so now translating it to our issue over here of the requirement of mezuzah, perfect. Rav says, I'll give you a very simple explanation. Rav Yehuda says that your sukkah is a permanent structure. So for those 7 days, does it require mezuzah? Sure. It's a permanent structure. And the Chachamim say that your sukkah is a diras arai. It's a temporary structure. Now the Gemara Sukkah says that according to the Chachamim, you want to make it sturdy, by all means, you can make it sturdy. But understood, however, that it's not a permanent structure. And Lamay Nafkamina, you want to make it higher than 20 amos? No. Because it's impossible to make any structure above 20 amos other than making it a permanent structure. So the Chachamim say it has to be a diras arai. Or at least it could be a diras arai. V'rabban al-tamayu d'amri sukkah diras arai b'inan v'lo mechavim b'mezuzah. And therefore, according to the Chachamim, there's no requirement for mezuzah even during the 7 days. Because it's not a residence. It's not a permanent residence. It's only a temporary residence. Period. Not period, but I guess we'll put a semicolon over here. So that's the issue regarding sukkah. And that's the machlokas between Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim regarding sukkah. Now let's finish up. What about Lishka? What about the Lishka's Parhedrin? Taima Lachud, Rabbanan Savri, Dira Bal Karcha, Shma Dira. Where the Chachamim say it requires a mezuzah. Now, the Lishka's Parhedrin is certainly a permanent structure. I mean, that goes without saying. But now there's another element, there's another component to take into consideration, right? A house becomes a home when you decide that that's where I want to live. But if you cannot decide where you want to live, if you're told where to live, that's not a home. That's not a dira. That's not a residence. And so the Gemara says that because we're telling the Kohen Gadol for 7 days, you go there. You don't have an option. You don't have a choice. That's where you'll be. So according to the Chachamim, that's not a dira. Interesting to note, I don't know, but it's certainly curious to know, does a jail require a mezuzah? Based on this argument, it sounds like the answer would be no. Sounds that way. So Rabbi Yehuda Savar Diras Bal Karcha Lo Shma Dira. And Rabbi Yehuda says that no, that a, the other way. The Chachamim hold that a Dira Bal Karcha is considered a Dira, and therefore it does require a mezuzah. And Rav Yehuda Sava Dira Bakar Chalosh Madira. And according to Rav Yehuda, no, it's not a Dira. So now, let's finally wrap this whole discussion up. So, comes out now that by Sukkah, does the Sukkah require mezuzah? Rav Yehuda says yes, Chachamim say no. And we're talking about during Sukkahs. What's the Machlokas? Whether Sukkah's Dira's Keva, Dira's Arai. Rav Yehuda holds it's Dira's Keva, Chachamim holds it's Dira's Arai. Good. Now we go to Lishkas Parhedrin. During the 7 days where the Kohen is there, it will have a mezuzah. The only question is that Minatora or is that Midrabanan? So the Chachamim say that's Minatora. Why? because it's a dira, it's a residence. And even though the Kohen Gadol is told that that's where you're going to be, and it's a dira balkarcha, the Chachamim say dira balkarcha is still considered a dira. And Rav Yehuda says, no, I disagree fundamentally. A dira balkarcha is not considered a dira, and therefore Minator doesn't require mezuzah. Finally, to wrap up this whole discussion, so why does Rav Yehuda rabbinically require a mezuzah over there? So, because therefore, it will come out now that according to Rav Yehuda, a jail doesn't require a mezuzah, because that's a dira balkarcha. And we don't want people to think that the Kohen Gadol is imprisoned in the Lishkas Parhedrin. So therefore, to give it that aura, that sense that it's not a prison, so therefore, you put up a mezuzah. Meaning, it's funny, according to Rav Yehuda, in reality, it is a prison. Meaning, the Kohen Gadol is living there, Baal Karcho, against his will. Meaning, that's where he has to live. But to give that attitude, that sense, that perception that it's not a prison, so therefore we throw him a mezuzah, and we give it like a homely feature, to make the Kohen Gadol now feel that it's not a prison. Okay, Adkan, we'll stop over here. Tomorrow we'll pick it up from the very bottom of the oven.